are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Development Committee meeting will be held on Thursday, January 23rd at 5:30 p.m. This will be a hybrid meeting, and it will be held at the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting...
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Silverton People for Peace, presenting the 22nd Annual Silverton MLK Observance, Monday, January 20th, featuring poetry readings, a community potluck, and keynote speaker Trevina Cassis. More information at kboo.fm/community-events.
The following program is a rebroadcast. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Portland.
Maybe it's the wind blowing in the rain, tide just rolling in. Make it flood again.
Welcome to Between the Covers on KBOO Portland 97 FM. I'm your host this week, Avi Marr.
I don't know why I hear you crying out loud.
Emily John Tobias is an American author and poet, Pushcart Prize nominee, and author of the debut collection, Monarch. She's an award-winning writer whose work has been featured in literary journals such as Santa Clara Review, Talking River Review, Flying South Literary Review, Furrow Literary Journal, and others. Midwestern raised, she now lives and writes on the coast of Southern California. She holds an MFA in writing from Pacific University in Oregon. Welcome to Between the Covers, Emily Tobias.
Thank you, Avi, for having me.
Of course. So I wanted to start sort of at your beginning and your road to writing. Were you a big reader as a kid? Were you writing as a kid? Tell me about you as a kid.
I was a lonely kid. Yeah, so I was raised by my mom, no siblings. My dad left when I was one. We were estranged and we've now come back together, thankfully. But yeah, I was a very lonely kid. And I remember feeling totally out of place in the world from a very, very early age. I don't remember having a lot of friends. And I was very attached to my mother. And my mom is a very spiritual being, and she really instilled in me a lot of creativity. So what happened is I created imaginary friends that is still to this day I can remember, and I would create these characters, these friends of mine that I would, you know, blame things on if I got in trouble or play with. And I do, looking back, believe that's where the writing energy came from. But along with that, I was a poet as a little kid. I've always been a poet at heart. And my mom would find me in our backyard in Wisconsin writing poetry. And she would ask me, you know, how do you know these things? And I would say, I just know. And so I feel that, you know, I feel that the energy of writing has always been a way for me to feel safe in the world, to express myself, to explore creativity, and to stay in the imagination rather than in the world. So yeah, I've been writing forever.
And was writing sort of your bridge back into the world if you felt a little bit apart from
Yes, the world? That's such a good question. I was very sick in addiction for a long period of time in my life. And I say that openly with lots of love because, first of all, the book Monarch deals with a lot of these issues, but also because I like talking about it. There were long periods of time where I didn't write at all, but there was always a friend in the writing that sort of just sat there on my shoulder saying, I'll be here when you're ready. So that was absolutely the tie for me back into the world many, many times throughout my life. Actually, I think writing saved my life multiple times in that way. So yeah, it definitely a bridge between, you know, healing, sickness and healing. It was always the bridge between, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So with this particular collection, if we start to focus on Monarch, how did you start writing the collection? How did it start to take shape, if you could go back that far?
Yeah. I had no idea there was a collection being written at all. What happened is I got sober in 2015, and I wanted to write. And so I finished my undergrad program in writing. And then Valerie Lakin, who was an old friend of mine and is a teacher at Pacific University, I came to her and I said, I need more of this. And this was very early sobriety. So everything was on red alert. All the bodies were on red alert. And so I just said, I want more of this. And she suggested Pacific University. And so when I started Pacific, I had no intention or even desire to be a writer. I just had this really strong longing to learn craft that I hadn't gotten enough of in my undergrad studies. So I just went with that. And then I was urged by early advisors to explore as much as I possibly could, do everything. And so that's what I started to do. And then suddenly I really just worked nonstop. I mean, I was totally immersed in learning the process. Yes. And so I just kept working and working. And eventually Chris Abani was was one of my advisors. He helped me see that there's a book here. And so once I realized that there was a book here, I just did not stop. Then once we knew there was a collection, I did not form the collection. The collection worked itself through me. Yeah. And I say that without it, which is such a sacred thing. It really did work itself through me. And then it became clear that we had a collection here. And then there we went.
So did you have a sense of the through line, or was it just create, 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 and then find out what it was about?
Yeah, I had a sense of it, but again, and I get chilled a bit. So the work and the characters started to teach me. You know, they started to teach me what was supposed to come through this collection. And so a lot of it was waiting for them to expose themselves, right? And I was very uncomfortable with time and patience. That was my biggest struggle through the process, is sometimes we have to wait. So I did have a sense. I had a sense that there was a through line of motherhood and how mothers or parents and their children heal together in reflection of one another. I have that sense. And other things, other through lines, like you say. But I really didn't have control over that. And I don't think we as writers do. And I think that's why it gets really freaky and scary sometimes. For me, it was. Especially at the time in my life that I wrote this book. I mean, I would have actual temper tantrums. I really.
Say more about that. I need to know about your temper tantrum. Yeah.
Well, you know, at the time, I mean, I was so raw. I was healing my own traumas. My own traumas from a lifetime of abuse, both self-inflicted and by others. I was in the process of healing these as I was writing the collection. So I was writing about characters who transform and heal and find redemption, and they were guiding me through the process of my own. And I was a mess. I mean, I couldn't, it was very uncomfortable for me to be in like this obsession over these characters and worlds and not know the answer. And I would have to wait. And so my journey was not about work harder. My journey was like, slow down. My mentors would say to me, stop. And that was a very uncomfortable place to be, because that's a, you know, releasing of control. So I would get so bent out of shape. I mean, I've matured a lot emotionally, because that's what we do in recovery, is we learn how to mature. And so I've changed a lot, but at that time, I was not equipped to handle my self-inflicted pressure to do it. And so, yeah, I'd have a lot of temper tantrums, and I only had a view of this project. All else just went aside. I honestly lost a couple friendships over it, right? Because I was unavailable. All of that's in the energy of the book. And I think that my process, I've learned my process as a writer. That was a big lesson for me. And that will never change much. But as I change as a person and the way I enter these projects has, of course, changed. And so I don't think that the energy of the book, the raw sort of emotional quality to it, I'm not sure it will ever be repeated in my career. So I'm really, you know, grateful for that I got through it.
It's such a funny parallel, because, you know, the feel of the book is running. You know, there's so much running, escaping, running to, running through. It's got that sort of breathless feeling to it. So it's amazing to hear that it kind of ripped through you. Yeah. It tore through you, and you had to sort of like mend yourself as you were like meeting up with your own characters and material. That's an amazing sort of moment in your life, where in a way it turned you inside out, it sounds like.
It did. And this is resonating, what you just said resonates so deeply in me. I can feel it all in my body, because that's exactly what it did. It ripped through me, and it, the process of writing it healed me in many, many ways. And I say that with trepidation, because a lot of times we're told to distance ourselves from our works. I'm going to say no. Well, and maybe that I just don't have the ability to do that. I'm not that kind of writer, and I'm not that kind of person. So yeah, it really did just have its way with me. It was a sacred time and a sacred process. So having the book to, you know, to hold is really like, I have been carrying it with me since I got it. It just, you know, it is, it's very interesting to be changed by it and return to it in this new way. And I mean, that's what I've been thinking a lot about this, because I do feel like how incredible these works of literature just stand so solidly. And then we return to them as different people all the time. And what we find in that. So these days I find different energies than I did when I wrote it.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Well, that's a good pivot point. Why don't we hear a little bit?
From the book?
Yeah.
Okay. This is from Nova, where Betty is a young runaway from LA, and she has just met Jones, who she becomes enamored with. We drove along the Venice boardwalk, where misfits camouflaged seamlessly against ocean grays, stunted waves, and jagged horizons. It all blended together like God got bored and climaxed with one long stroke of a hand, a stretched out buildup with a quick, smeared release. A sable sunset dimmed over lingering tourists and non-natives. I looked over at her again. I could smell the seediness on her. Joan slumped low in that Nova. Her body spread thin, shellacked itself over the whole mess that was Venice and sealed it up. That place would never be itself without Joan, and she seemed to know it. That saintly mess with rings on every finger and the way she balanced a Newport between her crooked front teeth. She didn't just belong to Venice. No, she ran that place. Betty, pull over there, she said. I need to see my ocean. I drove her close to the boardwalk. She slinked out before I had the Nova in park. I followed her down the boardwalk. She swayed one long stride, crossing over the next, hips moving in time with how the waves crash. Feathers off her earlobes blew back behind her. She outstretched her long arms, wrists twirling, fingers strumming ocean air like she knew just how to play the way the air. When she spun toward me, Venice gently carried her hair forward across her face, wrapped around her neck. She smiled. She smiled at me, then whirled back toward the water. I smelled her in the wind, vanilla and dirt. I breathed in, Venice. Sewers and smoke from good weed, bodies and skin that had been there all day long, all along. I saw the old guy from before, same spot, electric in hand, swaying along to speak Jane. His shirt was on this time. He'd taken his glasses off. He looked at me again, but this time I met his eyes and nodded my head. I knew then he belonged there. I looked for Jones. Couldn't tell where she ended and the shore began. I caught her feathers again, and she was like the black raven itself, swooped and circling. Sun settled, tourists retreated, Venice rolled onto her back into night, and all of it came out of hiding like leaves from a dog's belly. The place seemed inebriated. Against the boardwalk, Jones smoldered and Venice flared with buzzed freaks like hungry flies. The tide bellowed behind them, and I heard an echo, a whisper in the rumble, an old familiar like my mother's. There's something mystical here, and I was intoxicated, drunk on her voice, Venice, hooked by the white fingertips of each capped wave, tugging me closer. Venice's breath was air to a fire inside me, all for her, all for you, my queen. I wanted to scream, overtaken by her untamed sea waves, wilder and dark than day.
It was a great reminder of the musicality of your, yes, of the prose, but at the same time, it skips along really quickly. It lends itself to what you were saying about, it does sound like it just flowed right out of you. When you read it, do you feel that how it came through?
Yes. And especially with this particular story, because it was the hardest story to write, and it was, it went through like 23 complete structural rewrites, so not just edits, but it was the longest process. it started as a complete mess. And I learned a lot about craft through the process of creating this story. I had three mentors involved in it the whole entire time I was in, you know, at Pacific and in grad school. So it was the most challenging for me. And it's also very close to my heart.
So if we start out with the theme of running that have mentioned already, like that's a really good jumping off point, that reading about how does that represent something that the characters are going through, all the running in these stories. Yes. How has that with you?
I don't know if you knew that this story was actually originally called Run, which is so funny. That you, yeah. It's for the first half of its life, it was called Run. And when Chris Avani got involved, he helped me rename it Nova, yeah. So the characters are running from themselves. And all of them are running from themselves. And it's interesting because there is a lot of, you know, there are issues that arise through the narratives of the characters, right? And a lot of it deals with some of the heavy issues like abuse and addiction and all of these. But in truth, underneath that, the character, these are symptomatic of the characters running from self. And so, yeah, there is that energy of push and pull, you know, push and pull, but not to the outside world, or perhaps to the outside world only to return inward. But it really is, these are most of the conflict, although heavy-handed with pressure from the outside, are internal conflicts. Mm-hmm. And so the change that they endure is pressurized by the outside world or their addictions or whatever they're going through. But many of the characters transform slowly, you know, internally. And so there is this sense of running and coming home and running and coming home and running and coming home. And sometimes just standing, literally standing still.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, is when you made it so clear that when you were writing it, you were in the process of returning, right?
Yes.
And getting settled in sobriety and bringing a voice to that kind of coming home journey.
Yes, the collection is absolutely deals with finding home. Mm-hmm. And home within, home in this country, too. But certainly home within, and a feeling of belonging. Where do I belong? You know, and I think it's interesting because you would think, given everything you know about me and what I've just shared here, which is there was a period of time in early sobriety, and you would think that would create the work. But it didn't happen that way. The work created me. And I had no intention of like using my sobriety to create these characters. It just, you know, it didn't happen that way. So I guess this is what this art and writing has done my whole life for me.
I mean, it's a new question, but do you think that you needed to be firm enough in your sobriety to hear what needed to come through you wouldn't have been able to before?
100%. I would not have been able to handle it. I did not write for many, many years. There's something really beautiful that happens in early sobriety for those that are ready to do the deal, right? Which is like, we're like seeing the world for the first time. And we spent a lot of time together in that early period. I was just like all heart, you know, I was just open, just so wide open. And so, but I didn't think to myself, oh, I have to be clear-minded or emotionally mature enough to handle this. Again, you know, right? Again, it just like, it came for me. But once it started to come for me, I was like, I had to find ways to take care of myself as a result of. It wasn't like, I'm going to prepare to go into this. There was none of that. I didn't know how to do that. I mean, I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to care for myself as a sober adult woman. And so I had to figure out those tools. And while, you know, writing the book, because like it or not, the book was here to be written. There was no going away from that. I mean, it had to come through. And I again, you know, I suffered quite a bit. I mean, I really did, like, not to sound dramatic, but I suffered. And a lot of my stuff came up. I was riddled with self-doubt. I felt totally uncomfortable with any kind of success or failure. And so, but here it was, it came for me. And so I now that I'm thinking about it, this is such a beautiful conversation, because now that I'm thinking about it, you know, these tools that I did come, that came to me to help me care for myself are still things that I practice in my life now. And that's all because of, you know, these imaginary friends and this work we do.
It's funny, that was one of the other questions that reading Monarch Again reminded me of. And I don't usually ask people this, but I was thinking, sometimes you read characters and they feel like, did they just come fully formed into your mind, or did you put them together?
Oh, I love this question. This deals with space, with place. Because for me, access to my characters depends on my access to place, which the story of space, right? Yeah. So what will happen with me is my characters always get born through an image. I'm all up here.
You're visual.
I'm all visual. And so I have a very active mind and imagination. And so what will happen is, you know, sometimes an object can trigger an image, like a photograph or a memory or a dream or some sort of sensory input, like a smell, a feeling, a song. And from there, depending on how deep it is in my subconscious, right? So it's like, if these really repressed, buried memories or images that I have kind of drag their way up to my mind, my conscious mind, and then a character will come from that in an image. So they start to take physical form, like, right away. And then once that happens, we start communicating with each other. I mean, it really is a process of talking to them and getting to know them and asking them questions. And I think the characters in the book, and all of my characters I know, are shades of me and everyone I've known in my life. Through, we all have, you know, these beautiful, rich, deep lives, like so much life. And so I think they are shades of all of that.
One of the elements of it that stood out to me was they're dealing with power at all times and exchanges of power with a different character.
Yeah.
What's going to happen this time? Who has it? Who takes it? Who gives it away? Did you notice that when you were?
Absolutely. Every single story deals with power. You're right. I did not intend for that. Right? I mean, and then this is what I'd like to say, is that I do think there are some issues. There's a dynamic here that really fits into, it's relevant in our work, right? There are a lot of relevant issues. But there is no agenda for me. I didn't intend for any of that, but absolutely there is a power dynamic that happens with every single character here. Because in order to reclaim ourselves and to heal, we have to we have to get our power back in some way, shape, or form. We have to embody enough power to change. And that's what it's about, right? So I feel that in some stories, there are more overt methods. In others, it's much more subtle. And a lot of the antagonists and the secondary characters are dealing with loss of power or the perceived loss of power through vulnerability. That happens a lot. But yeah, these are exchanges of energy, giving power away, reclaiming it through the whole thing.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland, Oregon. One of my favorite dynamics like that is which story it is where the character had sort of sexual power over men.
Yeah.
And the sort of redemptive arc of she can't experience love until she gives that up.
Jesus wears Bermudas.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I've had little shivers all over my whole body this whole talk. That story is about power, and it's about allowing love. She is deeply wounded by shame, and she cannot allow herself to be loved. And that story was so incredible to write because it was an example of when I had to wait a long time to figure out how faith was going to play this out. You know, I kept putting her with, I kept trying to get her to be overly promiscuous and kind of go with that, which there is a period of time in the story where she is. And not until I realized, she allows love through the telling of her traumas. And that took a long time for it to become clear. And once it did, a breakthrough, you know, because she fed me that information. But until then, it's sort of how the story goes, which is just this long, you know, lifetime of numbness and of giving her body away because she wasn't able to allow herself to feel, you know, to feel love, to give love. And so it's one of my favorite stories. What changes her the most is just this ability to be honest about herself with a man that she can't, that whose love she cannot deny.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, there's no transaction. It really does strike me that this sort of transformative arc of each of the characters, I would imagine it's part of what we're doing in the subconscious when we're writing something. You know, that's the beauty of fiction, isn't it?
That yeah.
No idea what's going on.
Exactly. It's terrifying at times.
Yeah, yeah, and I think
the connection between the subconscious and the conscious mind is where the two link, and we can bring it forward. And this is something that was gifted to me. I learned this, right? I through a mentor, mentor taught me that there is a process of excavating subconscious mind, but we can't do it on purpose. We just allow space for it, right? Whether that be movement, yoga, dreams, whatever it is, time. And then these subconscious things get, excavated, and then they rise up to the conscious mind. And that's where we have the ability to start, pen to paper, so to speak, to write, and then craft takes it from there. But it has to go through a process of moving from subconscious to conscious mind first.
In your intro, you kind of lay out this autobiographical map, and you talk about dedicating it for to people's capacity to change. So yes. Can you talk a little bit about how that sits with you these days?
Yeah, of course. I think with the book, it's sort of an act of courage to get through it. I mean, because I do realize that there's a lot here. We really in looking at these stories, we have to look at some things within ourselves that might not be comfortable. And what I know from my own sets of experiences, the way that I live my life, and through the characters and what they taught me, is that in order to undergo change, we have to be pressurized in some certain way. And it demands that we take a look within. And so I think the stories and the book itself, my hope is that people feel like they belong in some way, shape, or form enough to start feeling some things. And then, once we start feeling some things, we can talk about these things together, and we can, take a different view within. So I know that we all have the ability to come through. I know it because I'm proof of it, and because I've known so many people, who have come through. And I've known many, many, many people who have died, and so who couldn't come through, but I know it's possible. And so there's an energy of potential, I feel, that perhaps can get ignited through these characters, and that creates change.
When I think about sobriety and the people that I know who've gotten clean, you can't predict what the thing is that helps somebody stay with us or come back. And it to me, it's still a mystery, and that grace, I think, is that's the word I put on it. I don't know if that's the right word.
The most beautiful word, because it just suggests that we don't get to know all the time. It just suggests that there is something that ties us all together, and there's something that we don't get to always be in charge of. There's something. It's a mystery. It's a beautiful mystery, exactly as you said. And that is, it is grace. It's a softening of all the edges that tell us that we're bad and we're different, and and create conflict. All of that, you know, this idea of grace is a softening of all of that, because we, especially for people like me, we are fortunate with it, because to have it, because we go, we shouldn't be here. This is all extra. I was as good as dead in 2015. So what else, you know? And you're right that the numbers are so small. I mean, the numbers are, I am one of the 4% that actually gets to live. So yeah, something happens, but not only for me, for then you, when I talk to you and my parents and the families of, it's all connected. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, the book is an extension of that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an extension of that. And I was asked really, like, sort of early on in the process, like, you got to make a decision. What kind of writer are you going to be? Are you going to be true to yourself or not? And that's it. The rest, and I was faced with that. And I mean, this is not metaphorical. I mean, this is a literal question. Make a choice and then let me know what you decide.
Yeah, I think I know who asked that question. Yeah, of course.
And I did. I made a choice. And you know, and this is the kind of work that came through then. And there will be more work that comes through later. And it is just, my hope is that it ties us together in some way further. So yeah, there's no doubt that there's, my life is filled with grace because I'm sitting here talking to you. Mm-hmm. And I shouldn't be.
It was very hard to, how would we say it? Like, honor and love your own work so that you could advocate for it, like you were saying.
Yeah, and I still don't. Just to be really honest.
That was my question.
I don't at all. And I'm not saying this for any, like, weird intent, but this, it takes time to grow into that.
Yeah.
It takes a whole lot of time. And especially with someone like me, because I've come through so much and I've got almost 9 years of sobriety and I'm still new. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I have this very strong sense of like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? And the thing was hard to make. I mean, it's been through, you're going to ask me probably about that too, but the whole like publishing of it, all of that was such a hard birth for this book. I guess what's changed these days is my relationship to that within me. I mean, I don't feel the need to beat those things out of me. What works for me is just a gentle approach with myself. An acknowledgement and like a witness of what's happening within me, a realistic view of myself as much as I can, and then a really kind, light touch when it comes to dealing with some of those heavier emotions, which is like self-doubt and comparing to other people, all the things that we do as humans. The only thing that's changed is my relationship to those things. Because a lot of the process, you know, I wanted myself to be different while I was constantly saying to myself, oh, do this better. You know, I do a lot less of that now, which is, it's more just allowing and noticing rather than trying to be something I'm not.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland, Oregon. Can you talk about the journey from these stories being written to through the publishing journey? Because I know there's been quite some
upheaval. Yeah. It was so challenging. I mean, the original idea was to get an agent and be done with it and move on to the next book. And that did not happen.
Which part? Finding an agent who...
Yeah, finding an agent didn't happen. It was right when COVID hit. And so there was a lot of, you know, the world was just in upheaval. And so... Yeah, so basically, you know, I started publishing the stories in the book, and a lot of them got picked up, which was helpful. And I tried really hard to find the right agent, and it didn't work. I mean, nobody wanted to represent it. I'm so grateful for that now, only in the sense of how tough it made me. You know, like I talk about like working through self-doubt. I really had to learn how to care for myself, like in with that. But then it just became clear, okay, small press, let's go that route. And so I spent a long time querying and getting the work out there, and I got a bunch of deals from very small presses, and none of them felt right for one way or reason or the other. And I was very...
The offers didn't feel right?
Yeah, the offers didn't feel right. And some of the press, it didn't feel right, you know. And then Nomadic Press came along, and they were out of Oakland. And the second they invited me, I was like, done. I just knew it. I felt it. I felt it immediately. I didn't even look at the contract. It just was done. You know, they're doing some really amazing stuff in the community, and there was an energy of like of being a family, really, you know, like, and that was not something I had found anywhere else. So I signed with them, and the most remarkable, extraordinary gift that came out of that is my editor, who is, you know, going to be my lifelong editor, which is such a fantastic thing, but also has become a really dear friend of mine, one of my closest friends. My mom got really sick this year and has dementia, and her mom was going through, and we just bonded over the work and our families. So that was all going on as well. And then Nomadic's funding got rejected. And mid-production, just short of a cover, Michaela and I had already been through the book three times, I think. Can't remember, twice or three times. And the Nomadic closed, had to shut down. And so, and then I was just a wreck. I was so depressed. I couldn't believe how hard it hit me. I was so depressed. And then I went to Oakland to celebrate the closure, and I met some really wonderful people. I mean, I've met some of my really close friends and colleagues now, and, you know, supporters have came through Nomadic. The owner of Nomadic knew Black Lawrence, and so they arranged to migrate all of Nomadic's titles to Black Lawrence. And because I was just, you know, still in production, they picked me up as sort of a new author, I guess. I got lucky. I got very, very lucky. I don't think it would have happened. And I did query other presses too with the project in that interim when Nomadic closed. And then there was, I did push it out to some other really good presses, which a few of them almost took it and just decided not to. And, you know, there's just so much that goes into it. It's very hard to not fall into it, to the feeling of like, maybe the work is just crap. Like, or you probably have to edit that. You know, it's really hard to not fall into that. And I fall into it all the time. And then, you know, of course, the process is loving myself out of that. And that's why I'm so grateful for this. Because there is nothing that I cannot love myself. And I don't mean it in some, like, you know, catchy way. No. I mean, like, this creating the space for myself to feel these, to feel bad, and then being able to create a nurturing environment for me to walk through that. I know how to do that now. And a lot of that came from through this publishing thing.
Yeah, it does seem like you had no choice but to advocate for yourself and your work, yeah, whether you believe in it or not.
That's right. And also, I mean, I learned every in and out, in all the ins and outs of small press publishing. I created my own business for myself. I mean,
oh, you did?
Yeah. I mean, I teach about small press publishing now when I can. You know, I'm the one that built my own website. I take care of, I mean, I am my little own entity. And had I gotten signed and picked up and swooped away, that would not be the case. And there's a lot of power in that, you know, and I get to use my intuition to guide me through this whole thing. You know, I got to do the cover, and I got all these beautiful things. I mean, it really builds empowerment and strength and allows me to be guided by my intuition, which is really how I live my life. And it, you know, so there will be time for all of what I thought I wanted before. There's time for that when I'm ready. I thought I was ready. I'm ready. Well, I guess you're not, because we're not there yet. But, you know, it's just kind of in learning to honor the process of time, and just like my characters taught me, and I wouldn't give it up for anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I say that with such an open heart. Like, the challenges are actually what I am most grateful for. And also, it's just very, very challenging.
It really helped you kind of build your muscle about being a working writer, as opposed to, like you said, someone who, your fairy godmother comes and gives you a contract.
Yes. Because it does happen that way for some people.
That certainly does.
And it did not happen that way for me. Nothing about the birth of this book was easy. Nothing. I mean, writing it, I mean, how perfect is that though, right? Like, writing it, we've talked about that. Publishing it, creating it, selling it, none of it was handed to me or easy. And like, and even though sometimes I doubt it, I'm doing it. Because again, you know, I told you my mom got real sick, and I bring that up to in this conversation, because when I come to the book, I feel her here, you know, and I see motherhood here in new ways that I never have. So what a gift that is. All of that happened while creating this book. Mm-hmm. And so it's an amazing, forceful, powerful journey to go through that would not have been afforded had somebody swooped me up and taken me on the writer ride. It would never happen. I have all of this experience now. I can't help but think that will lead to some really beautiful moments and beautiful things in my career as a writer.
A full toolkit where, because I think that is the sort of fairy tale is, you know, you publish three stories, then an agent falls in love with you, and then they present you at Penguin and you move on.
Yeah, it's exactly, you're right. I built the space and the equity to handle whatever's to come over a long period of time through a lot of struggle, both in the process of writing and in advocating for it. And so I am readier and more open to, and more realistic, right, about the successes, and the failures, all of it, none of it matters as much. Yeah. I was so attached to the outcome of all of it, Avi. I was like, and I'm not anymore, which frees up a whole lot of space to let it do what it's going to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, all of that worked in my favor. It just, we never see these things until we look back.
Well, and you know, just sort of also envisioning where's publishing going, because we could have another hour's conversation about, you know, you're the little guy, right? And the fight of the small presses to bring art to the people versus this kind of corporate overlord situation, and that we would all take a contract from, but still, you know, but still it's sort of like your characters, like tenacity and opposition, and then the desire to come home anyway.
That's so interesting what you said, because you're right. It's like, what are we fighting for here? It's like, you know, you said it, like any one of us would take a deal like that, like, yep. But actually, what are we really doing here? So it's not only a matter of like, what kind of writer are you going to be, but how are you going to interact as a businesswoman?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of businesswoman are you going to be, Emily? You know what?
Well, because you have to choose that too.
Yes, you have to choose that. So, and I have had a lot of opportunity to answer that question just by the way I'm doing it. You know, it's clear to me. It's obvious. And also, you know, I do fantasize about having it easier, right? I do. Of course, I do. But is that going to create the energy with which I make decisions? No, it doesn't. I'm very, very realistic.
Yeah. So one last question. So did any of your characters stay with you to revisit after this set of experiences with them?
All of them actually do. Betty and Jones and Nova are particular interest to me, and I felt like I feel like I could write a whole series. It was said to me, don't write about those characters, you have a million more characters to create and so much more to say.
It's been a joy to talk to you.
The best.
Thank you so much.
It's the wind blowing in the rain.
That's our show for today. Thanks for listening to Between the Covers here on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Original music from Karen Talumi.
Hiding in the clouds, I don't know why. I hear you crying out loud.
You're tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy jueves 16 de enero del 2025.